for joining us. Today is the Power Hour. I'll give you a heads up. We usually don't get to all the questions, so you want to jump in as quick as possible. Press one on your phone if you have a question, a comment, a topic, and we will get to you. We're going to get started. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is the Power Hour. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance. Engines, performance, fuel mileage, modifications, upgrades, emissions, troubleshooting, new technology, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and join us. I've got John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power today. Hey, welcome back, guys.
Thanks, Kevin. Glad to be here.
Good to be here, Kevin.
And guys, I know you are, you guys carry the fleet air filter, and it's something you believe in and use a lot. And we've also got joining us today, Jeffrey Judge from Fleet Air Filter. Jeffrey, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
So Jeffrey, what's going on over at Fleet Air Filters these days? You guys look busy.
We're trying to be busy. We're in the process. Hopefully by the first of the year, we will be having all of our CNC work done in-house for our Gen 3 filters. So we're in the process. I've been in a meeting all morning, software guys, and getting that set up. So first of the year, we'll be doing all that in-house, you know, so we can get better quality control over it and have more inventory. Right now, we're getting new stock in all the Gen 3 filters every day. So we've had a couple back orders here lately, and we're getting that handled as quickly as possible. And that's why we're trying to move everything in-house.
Well, that's exciting. And it's also exciting to realize we're on Gen 3. Well, you guys have been at this a while.
It's been a work in progress. The Gen 3 filters, which are all the newer filters for like the T660s, T680s, and Coronados and Cascadias, we're trying to stay up to date with all the new filter technology that they keep producing, so we can stay on top of our game and get guys the performance and fuel mileage out of their trucks that they want and expect out of our filters.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to bring John in on this as well. John, you've seen a lot of trucks. You've worked with the Fleet Air Filter a lot. Doesn't it seem like, especially when you look at the newer trucks and some of the designs on these new filters, I realize space is at a premium under that hood. There's more and more stuff being added all the time. But it seems to me like sometimes the air intake system is the last thing to be thought of. And anymore, they're just cramming it into whatever space they can find.
That's obvious to me right now. Yeah, look at the filter area itself is cut in half from what it used to be on some of them. So that's got to be a challenge for you there at Fleet, isn't it?
It has been a challenge. We're trying to get all of our filters where they're going to get the adequate airflow and filtration. Most of our filters that we've been designing have 2 to 3 times as much surface area as the OEM filters that they have out now. So, you know, we get a lot of calls, you know, I can hear my turbo more, or I can feel the power, you know, when I'm pulling a hill and things like that. So it's good to know that the work that we've put into it is, you know, almost an immediate response and effect on the truck. You know, that's something that we've been striving since we came out, you know, 10 or 12 years ago. and that's one of the things that we keep striving to always evolve and keep this going.
Yeah, well, that's John, obvious to me looking at the product. Yeah, it's one of my favorite products that we sell here, from the quality of the build that I see, the, you know, even the spun parts or the machine parts that I see on them all look terrific, really high quality. I have a question for you. It's somewhat selfish. When you do your design work, do you do any sort of modeling or CFD to calculate flow, or do you use a flow bench, or, you know, and just get hard numbers that way? What's your process in, you know, when you design, quantifying, you know, the flow numbers before you put something to market?
Well, first of all, we do all of our 3D CAD work in-house. I've been handling that for the past several years. Then we try to use a flow bench to get adequate numbers off of that, but we really like to test, you know, real world, have a truck, you know, spend some time with it, you know, try to, you know, get them on the highway and let them see how it's performing and seeing what else we can do. That's one of the things that we're doing, all this new CNC stuff here. We just got our machine delivered a few weeks ago. So we're trying to get it so if we need to make any adjustments, we can do it, you know, within a day tops, as opposed to it taking several weeks to get a prototype out so we can get it tested that way. So we're trying to have a real example, a real prototype that's going to be as close to a ready-made piece as possible, so we can get it out on the road and test it as soon as possible.
I got you. Yeah, I'm living through some trial and error right now with our latest product, Dorothy, here. That's been challenging, and just wondering, you know, what your process was and how you go about, you know, because you could have similar issues to what I'm experiencing with mine right now.
Yeah, and you know, it is a challenge. You know, that's when we quit doing all the modeling and stuff that we've had, and, you know, drawing dimensions on paper and stuff, we just went straight for it and, you know, purchased the software to start doing it, which the 3D software that we use does offer, you know, an air gauge and all on that, but, you know, we would rather go in and try to get real world results, you know, right then and there, so we can know what we do need to change and, you know, adjust it where it would be more beneficial for the truck as opposed to, you know, what it would be for us, you know, so we can make sure that we get as much possible out of the filter as far as, you know, cut time and as far as designing the things and as far as, you know, ease of install for some of the users. We don't like to have any issues with that. We make sure that everything fits perfect, and when you get a final product from us, you're going to be happy with it for years to come.
That's terrific. Yeah, I'm very, very impressed with it. It's like I said, one of my favorite products that we sell here. It's we've never had anybody unhappy with, and you see the results almost immediately, and you hear them. It's a really, really nice product.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
John, you know, I don't think people realize, you know, how old the paper filter technology is and how it really hasn't changed much. And it's just lacking in every area. In some ways, it's too dense for airflow, and yet it still lets more dirt through than an oiled foam filter does. But how important is airflow to a diesel engine?
It's one of the most important things, if not the most important thing. Yeah, airflow is everything. An engine's just an air pump. If you can't efficiently move air, you're not going to efficiently burn diesel fuel. It's pretty simple.
which is why, you know, I've often wondered why it seems like an afterthought, you know, and you have two issues. You have the intake system, the shape, the size, the turns, the, you know, how much filter area you have, and then the filter media itself. And at least we can fix that. You know, at least we can change the media and get much better airflow out of the fleet air filter. But it is, I've seen some of these new filters, that there's some challenging designs. Like I said, it seems like they're just cramming, they're shrinking the air intake system and cramming it in wherever they can. And it seems to me like it's a little more important than that.
Oh, it absolutely is. And if you think about the constraints the manufacturers have, you know, we talk about this often about the aftermarket and where we fit into things. You know, they've got budgetary constraints. They've got, you know, aerodynamics, and they've got design criteria to deal with. And quite often, you know, they're not going to, and they know they're not going to do the best they can with a certain aspect of a design. It's a compromise that they're willing to take. So, you know, that's where it's up to us to take a look and see what we can do in a product like the Fleet Air Filter, particularly on these new trucks, is going to be huge. That's going to be a really big deal.
Absolutely. Hey, Jeffrey, anything going on for the holidays?
Well, we would like to go ahead and announce that between Let's Truck and Pittsburgh Power and of course with us, that you can pick up any of the filters, including the spare wraps, 10% off. That's going to be from Thursday, the 23rd of November, up until January 2nd. This is the first time that we've ever offered our filters on sale. So we're trying to go ahead and let everybody know that in the coming days and weeks leading up to Christmas, you can definitely be picking up a Fleet Air filter and have a nice little Christmas present for everybody.
Fantastic. Jeffrey Judge from Fleet Air Filter, thanks for joining us. Make sure to grab your filter soon. 10% off is a great deal, but you also want to get your tax deduction in this year. So pick it up. We're doing it at the letstruck.com store, Pittsburgh Power Fleet Air Filter. Doesn't matter where you get it, just get it, get your discount, get your tax deduction. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. John and Ethan are with me here. Great special on the Fleet Air Filter. Make sure you grab that. John, some exciting news this past week. I know you and I both watched the unveiling of the Tesla truck. And I got to say, I know we're not there yet on electric truck technology. There's still a lot to go, but I was pleasantly surprised that this truck is more than what I expected out of their first version.
Oh, absolutely. You know, even if it doesn't quite live up to that, it doesn't frighten me. Everybody seems to want to think it's going to, you know, be everything he says right now. And you've got to be more realistic than that. You know, what Tesla are doing right now are providing proof of concept. They're building infrastructure. I'm sure they're racking up patents left and right on these control systems and everything on here that, you know, whenever the big players jump in, it's going to be huge. And it takes a mind like Musk, you know, at the helm to do this. You know, everyone wants to poo-poo it and say they didn't make money last year and blah, 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 blah. Doesn't matter. Completely doesn't matter. He's out there doing stuff. He's out there making things happen. And I don't care, you know, how much government money he got or whatever. He's actually getting stuff done with it. And, you know, if that proves to be nothing more than he's done thus far, I got to believe it was worth it to somebody. I'm sure there are already, you know, numerous patents that will need to be bought up and things, because it's going to happen. It's a matter of when, not if. So that we're going to go this way. So not much of a choice.
You know, it's interesting. I'm with you. I mean, he's a salesman. He's got to be. I mean, he's got big visions, big dreams, big goals. He's going to go out there and he's going to give you the best of everything. There's no question. And it may not live up to some of that. There's going to be some shortcomings. But, you know, if we think about the internal combustion engine, we have over 100+ years at that. That's a long time to improve and work out bugs. And honestly, whether we look at gasoline or diesel, I'm not sure where we go next. You know, what could they do to make that technology advance in a really spectacular way. I just don't see it. We're making small gains here and there, but I don't know where we would take that technology, especially now with the mission that have really overcomplicated. Even if we get it right the way we do in cars, I still don't think it's the best way to propel a vehicle. When you look at electric technology, if we could make improvements in battery, I mean, that's the weak point clearly. When I looked at this truck, or when I got reinterested in Tesla again, and I've looked at them before, but I happened to be near a mall. I knew they had a store in there, so I walked in. And you look at that car, and I crawled all over it. And they even, they have the version there with no body on it. It's just the frame and the motors. And I look at that and I think, this is so simple. There's just almost nothing to this. I get that it's incredibly complicated and, really sophisticated technology. But when you look at the moving parts, there's almost nothing.
Absolutely. And the truck's the same way. I guarantee your current truck with all of its emission controls and everything, which I'm not afraid of either, is probably more complicated than that Tesla truck. I guarantee you it's probably harder to work on. It is probably more complicated than that Tesla truck. If you think about the technology, okay, so there's some incredibly complicated control systems, but what attaches them is just some wire. There's not going to be a whole lot under there. So it makes a ton of sense on many, many levels to me. It does. It's going to be fun. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch. I'm glad it's happening in my lifetime. It's going to be really interesting for our kids. So that's, we'll definitely see it.
I have a hard time. People think because I post about autonomous technology all the time that somehow I'm for it. I don't know what could be further from the truth. I've built my entire life, my career, my business around one customer, people who drive trucks. That's been my whole business and whole life. Why would I be for a technology that's going to replace them? But I realize it's happening. It's coming. So when I post, it's really just to say, look, this is coming. There's still tons of opportunity for drivers. There's going to be for at least another decade, but it's changing. So it's hard for me to get excited about autonomous technology. Even though I'm kind of a tech geek and I'd love to see it, I hate what it's going to do to my industry and my business. But the electric truck technology, I can get really excited about. I think this is
absolutely.
And the fact that it has some autonomous technology on it, this is the part of autonomous that I would like. There's still a driver. I could still own this truck as an owner operator. Honestly, if I still had my fleet at FedEx, they'd have $5,000 of my money right now, and I'd have one of these on order.
Absolutely. Just imagine, you could build yourself a killer RV out of one, order one anyway.
I thought about
Renegade
that.
And build a coach behind it.
I thought of
why not?
That. It's just really hard to justify that cost. I don't put enough miles on mine. When it was out there making money, and if their cost savings comes true, and they didn't give us a lot of numbers, but I can kind of make a guess at how they get to their $1.25, and is it truly a 20% savings? Well, it is if we're talking about a fleet. This was all based on fleet cost of a brand new truck over a certain amount of time. And, if you can save 20%, that's going to be huge. It's not going to work in every operation. We know that. There are going to be some limitations. But the other thing that Tesla has been pretty darn good about is they have a track record of building out infrastructure, and they've done a good job of it. And, a couple years ago when natural gas was the big rage, and I was saying back then, I don't think this is going anywhere. This technology to me makes no sense whatsoever. And, there's not enough infrastructure for it. Nobody took the time to build out the infrastructure. And as soon as diesel prices went down, everybody jumped off the natural gas bandwagon. Nobody's even talking about it anymore. We have the nickel, which is also really exciting. But are they going to be able to bring that to the real world or not? Will they be able to build out their hydrogen network? I don't know, because they haven't proven that yet. But Tesla has proven that they will build out the infrastructure for this vehicle.
Oh, absolutely. To me, all of the, you know, the hydrogen is not fossil based, really. It might take it to make it. Any of the fossil based technology, spending money and effort and technology and infrastructure. In that realm, to me, is senseless. I just don't see it. The renewables are going to happen. The battery technology is what's going to take us there. The ability to store the energy, no matter how you capture it, is what's going to do it. You know, whether you know you're capturing it on your truck with regenerative braking, or just rolling down a hill, or however it may work, or if you're capturing it from wind, or capturing it from sun, or if you're burning something to get it too. Either way, it's gonna if you capture it and reuse it and move it around. That's where the technology is right now with everything. So you know, to the natural gas thing, there's just not enough energy in it per pound or per space or whatever for it to ever really made sense. And it only made sense to people who were getting it for free. You know, I had gas companies I dealt with when I worked with my father that had a natural gas power fleet, and it was cheaper for them to just pressurize right there and do it. But they were a gas company. So, OK, that makes sense. But, right. You know, to build, to invest, to, you know, build infrastructure around something like that, to me, is just not sensible. It's, it doesn't, you know, it's say what you want. You know, the millennials will be taken over soon, and they believe what they believe, and it's things are going to change. It's just going to change. And it's good. I mean, things can change. It's okay. We'll work through it.
You know, if you look at
the only thing that's constant is change, right?
That's right. And if we think about, you know, think about phone service, you know, however long ago it was, long time ago, we wired the entire country for phone service. Well, that technology is useless now. I mean, I haven't had a wired home phone in a decade. Why would I? I have a phone in my pocket. Right. Why would I? And his vision of power, of electricity, is the same thing. We've built this huge grid, this power grid, and we know, you and I have talked about the whole EMP threat and, you know, hacking our grid through the internet and what that would do. His vision of power would eliminate the grid completely. He's already in Puerto Rico, where they lost their whole grid, saying, wait a minute, why would you rebuild the grid? Let's build little individual solar collectors and use power walls. And he'll be in there providing power to people in days with his technology, when they're claiming it could take years to rebuild their grid, and we still have the same old vulnerable grid again. You know, his idea is right. Why every house would be its own little power station, and your vehicles would be powered from there, and your house would be powered from there, and it'll be primarily solar, but we could use wind or, you know, who knows what other kind of technology to generate the electricity. Our biggest problem is still storage, but they're making a lot of headway on storage. He gets a lot of criticism because he's out in front. He is a little weird, but I think some of the stuff he's doing is absolutely amazing. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. John, you know, the other thing that, again, I've studied electric vehicle technology, but it's been a little while and I haven't gotten really deep into it, mostly because I just felt like with our battery technology, we weren't there yet. And I think we are now. I mean, we're ready. Tesla's already proving it in cars. They're ready to jump into the truck market. But what I really started thinking about was when they talked about the performance of this truck. you know, 0 to 60 in 5 seconds, 0 to 60 in 20 seconds with 80,000 pounds. That's incredible. And no gears, no shifting, yep. no transmission, no differential, no driveline. You think of all the problems that go away with that technology. And then, you know, the big surprise of the night, we all knew there was a truck coming. The big surprise of the night was the Roadster. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, when you think of that title of world's fastest production car, you know, lots of people fight over that title every year, and it gets beaten by a little bit here or there, and they spend gobs and gobs of money to come up with that vehicle. And again, that's after 100+ years of internal combustion technology, 100+ years to work on that and perfect it. And out of the blue, Tesla produces an electric car that's the fastest production car in the world.
Amazing, isn't it? I love it. And that truck, think about that. That thing would, no pun intended, would smoke the biggest, baddest cat we've ever built.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It wouldn't even be close. Like would walk right by it. Not even close. So it just blows me away. It's real performance, too, which is, that's the angle Tesla's always taken. You know, you could always look down your nose at a Prius. Just because of whatever, you know, I mean, I've actually driven one and they're kind of fun to drive, but, it's, you know, they've never, ever, you know, their first prototypes are built out of Lotus Elises, which were a really light aluminum, little 2-seater, you know, cool car. And they just convert them. So the very first Teslas were, you know, just Lotus Elises that were converted to electric. And again, they proved concept. The cars performed even better, you know. They had a range of maybe 80 miles at the time, if that. You know, Top Gear guys would get them and run them around the racetrack till they died. I think in you know, in full chat, they'd make it like 2 or 3 laps and they'd fall flat on their face. But, you know, while it ran, it performed. You know, and this technology's grown exponentially since, and it's going to continue to. I think the real zenith is about to happen. I don't think it's even we're at the tip of the iceberg now. When everybody else jumps in, it's going to be huge, absolutely huge.
Yeah. I agree. You know, I had a caller over the weekend who kind of criticized me for praising Tesla and ignoring Cummins with their electric truck and Daimler with their electric truck. And I said, look, I get it. Cummins came out and, you know, announced their truck. That's exciting. Daimler, everybody's got something in the works. I said, but here's the reason I'm praising Tesla. One, they've proven they can do this. They've put an electric vehicle on the road that light years ahead of everybody else. Forget the Chevy Volt and the Nissan Leaf. And, you know, they don't even come close to the Tesla. They've built out their supercharging network, which is pretty amazing. And here's the other thing. When I saw Cummins truck, their electric truck, I was underwhelmed. I mean, they basically did what Tesla was doing a decade ago. They're taking an off-the-shelf truck and modifying it. And you're not getting all the advantages of not having an engine and a drivetrain. You look at Tesla, that truck looks like no other truck that's ever been designed because they can. They don't have an engine and a drivetrain. They have to fit everything around.
So, well, where a lot of people – I look at Tesla as a technology company. So the big three automakers and the Europeans and Cummins, they have responsibilities right now. You know, they've got to build engines. They've got to design emission control systems. And all the while, they've got shareholders they have to keep happy. They've got a customer base they have to keep happy. Tesla doesn't. Tesla does have shareholders to keep happy, I'm sure. There are plenty of investors there. There's a lot to be done there. But as long as they're creating the technology, as long as they're proving concept, as long as they're working on infrastructure – they're doing their job. Their job's not to be a viable car or truck company right now. Maybe it'll grow into that. Maybe it'll work out for them. I personally believe that they're the canary in the coal mine. You know, while the big three automakers and the big truck makers and so forth are sitting there, you know, keeping their customers happy and doing the job they have to do and wrapped up in the moment of dealing with old technology and trying to make it work, while they have a tiny bit of their budget that they could allot to projects like this and a tiny bit of time they could allot to projects like this, it's all Tesla does. It's their job, right? So that's what they're doing. Okay, yeah, they're selling some cars. They're a niche car maker, whatever. But that's really not their primary deal. They are a technology company. So, and you need to think of it like that. You can't think of them as a viable, you know, automaker. Oh, they'll be out of business in a year. They had, you know, $600 million in losses last year, blah, 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 blah. So what? You know, it just, right. it just doesn't matter.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really exciting. I am going to try, we're trying to get an inside track. I'd love to be able to go down there and maybe do some more reporting on that truck. So Lisa's working on that for me. The other thing I saw in the news today, this is the autonomous side of things, which I'm not nearly as excited about, but we have to pay attention to. Uber, I've talked many, many times about what Uber's long game really is. They used their ride-sharing app to capture the ride-sharing market, and they've done a very good job of it. They are the largest taxi company in the world, and up until now, they didn't own any vehicles to speak of. Largest taxi company in the world. Their long game, though, they're capturing the market first, and then they'll bring in their autonomous technology to really take advantage of that market at a very low cost. That's my belief that that's their long game. I think they're going to do the same thing in freight. They're using owner operators and small carriers to capture the freight market as a broker. And eventually they'll have the freight and then they'll have the autonomous equipment. They just bought $1.4 billion worth of Volvo XC90s that'll be fully autonomous.
Oh, I read that same article that you did, and it made the local news here first because you know where Uber Technologies is based. They're
right.
They're in an old old brownfield mill site in Pittsburgh. I mean, so the Advanced Vehicle Technology Group is based here. This is their headquarters. It's not in Silicon Valley. It's in good old Pittsburgh, PA. So
yeah.
It's really cool. Though, you know, I look at that as a double-edged sword. But if you look at their business model, right? So right now they got a bunch of owner-operator taxis, don't they? You know, so it's the same thing. It's an owner-operator out there driving people around instead of freight, and they're about to be replaced. I mean, not tomorrow. It's going to take a while.
No.
But they bought, you know, that number. You gave the monetary amount. I'll give the number of vehicles: 24,000 XC90 Volvos. What a boon for Volvo! And they chose. They did choose, you know, maybe not by, I'm sure by design, but they did choose the safest vehicle in the world. Like you could roll one of those things over a cliff and not get hurt. So, you know, so for all the people who are going to be afraid of an autonomous vehicle, it's like, well, you're in an XC90 that can, you know, we could drive it off of this bridge and you're probably going to survive. So it's
right.
It's amazing to me what's going on there. There was a really cool little blurb on one of the local NPR news shows in the morning one day a few weeks ago. It's predicted that within 2 years, there will be 200,000 jobs in the autonomous vehicle, either engineering, installation, within the Pittsburgh area. So, you know, forget, we're going to have more people working in the autonomous field than ever worked here in steel. Think about that. And
wow.
And it's just because the investment that was made in this area with universities and the amount of, corporate headquarters we have here. This is a town of 400,000 people. You know, if that. So the city proper is 400,000 people. The whole suburban area is 1 million. And it's predicted that there'll be 200,000 people working in the autonomous field here. So the artificial intelligence, Argo AI, is based here. They do all the artificial intelligence for probably every automated everything in the world. Ford just bought a huge hunk of property right down the road from Uber where they're going to put their autonomous lab. So it's just, I love it because of where I am. You know, my son is an engineering student. Right now, Uber is hiring engineering grads from CMU at $200,000 a year. You could go to CMU, which isn't cheap. You're going to spend $250,000 to go there unless you get a scholarship.
Right.
Walk out with an engineering degree, walk right down the road to Uber and have a job for $200,000 a year. Think about that.
Wow. That's incredible.
So let's just put those numbers. Let those roll around in your head a little bit.
Well, you know, the 24,000 Volvo XC90s, $1.4 billion. Those are crazy numbers, and they're going to start delivering those in the next couple of years. It's not long off. Oh, crazy stuff. I've got to get to a break. We're going to come back. We're going to get to some of your calls and questions, so stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. Check out the website. It's letstruck.com. If you haven't downloaded our app yet, get it. It's free. It does one thing, and it does it really well. You download the app, you open it up, you can listen to all of our shows. You can listen live. You can listen to all the recorded shows. You can listen to the weekend shows. Everything's on there, and it's free. Go to your app store and search Audio Road, no space, Audio Road, one word. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. I know we're down to the final segment. We haven't even taken a call yet. John and I are talking about new technology. John, you know, I was thinking
we need to do our we do need to do our tech talk show at some point, once a month or something.
We do. And you know what? I have another friend. I'm sure along the lines you've seen our monkey brittle. The stuff just literally flies off the shelves. This weekend, we made a batch of 200 bags of monkey brittle. 53 minutes, it was sold out. But that's clearly beside the point. The guy who owns the company that we're working with, we're kind of partnering with them now. We help them make it, and we've got a new building going up so we can make more of it. He is a huge electric car aficionado. Has been going way, way back when. He also owns a chain of media stores like books, music, used, vintage, all that stuff. He owns a big chain around Tucson, lots of locations called Bookman's. And he was the first business in the United States to have electric car charging in his parking lots of his Bookman stores. The first one in the United States.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, he buys all these, some of the really little, tiny electric cars that have come along over the years. Some of them are British, and he restores them. And so he wants to do a show about, electric car technology. So maybe the three of us will get together and we'll cover, new technology. I think that would be fun.
Oh, absolutely. You live in the hotbed of it. I've done some research with our own research into doing an electrified axle and so forth. But I find a whole lot of tinkerers have websites and have speed controllers and different things. They're all either based in Portland or Seattle. There's a whole underground network of people. There's a blog on somewhere of a fellow who got a crashed Tesla and put a whole VW bus body on top of it. So he's got he took a Model S and took all the underpinnings of it and put it under an old Westie VW bus. So he's got he had to stretch it a little bit to get the wheelbase right. So he had two buses really, and he made a big, he made an electric all-wheel drive electric, 200 mile plus range VW bus with all Tesla underpinnings on it. So it was really cool. But so if you just do a little Google search, you'll find the stuff. And they're all where you are, with all those crazy hippies there in Portland. So it's they're creative bunch up there. I've spent some time up there, and there really are a lot of creative people around, and that seems to be spilling into technology as well.
They're all smoking pot and playing with electricity. It's amazing what happens.
Oh yeah. Yep.
So I got thinking about all those jobs there in Pittsburgh, and I think I'm probably a little old to go back to school to think about one of those jobs in autonomous technology, but I'm wondering if maybe I could get a job with being a crash test dummy for the autonomous vehicles.
You probably could. Yeah, you probably can. Well, I'm damn proud to have a kid that's he's pulling down really, really good numbers at an elite engineering school right now. So he's in his junior year. He's going to stay for for five and leave with a master's. So he's going to, you know, he's not quite, he's got more than a year to go, but what a great time to be a young person with an engineering degree. It's just, there is so much going on. There's so much opportunity. It's amazing.
Got to be very, very exciting for him. Let's get to a call or two before we've got to wrap this show up. Let's go to Indiana. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Kevin. You guys kind of killed my thunder a little bit now with all this technology. I'm not sure if I want to ask my question.
Oh, go ahead. It all matters. Yeah. Yeah. This is all so far down the road, don't worry.
Yeah, right? Well, I've got a 94 Kenworth T600. I apologize to Pittsburgh Power. I was scheduled for November 6th, but one of the company owners put a kibosh on the registration, so I couldn't get it out there. I'm getting it in-framed locally. And after that's done and I've got it on the road roadworthy, I wanted to throw a few options at you and see what order you would put them in. The first one was fleet air filter versus the OPS, and then the second one was upgrading the DDEC 3 ECM to DDEC 4 and putting on the VG Turbo versus the FAST.
You know, we could argue. I'll jump in. We could argue back and forth all day about, you know, will this one cost this much, returns this much, this one costs this much, returns this much. We could make ourselves crazy with the numbers. They're all good products. Right. I would absolutely have all of them on my list. But one of the best ways I've found to simplify this whole decision-making process, it's not perfect, but it works and it's easy. I just get all of these items on a list. Get them all priced with installation, so we have total cost. And then I just sort that list from cheapest to most expensive and start working through it as my budget allows. I just found it's the easiest way to make these decisions.
Right. And to throw a little extra into that question, I was going to say, if cost wasn't the issue, what would you do first?
All of it. If cost wasn't an issue, then I would just do it all.
Well, you had to place it in an order, but you wanted to choose what actually gave you the better return and satisfaction first.
Well, that's when it starts to get complicated, because we can even get down to the point where a fleet air filter, I mean, none of these products are 100% consistent across the board. Sometimes we'll get 0.3 out of something. Sometimes we won't even get a measurable difference. So every truck's a little different, every operation's a little different. So sometimes one product helps one operation more than another, or works better on one engine than on another. And once we start getting down to that, okay, let's try to figure out which one would be the best return on investment, that's when it gets complicated. So that's why I said, look, the only way I know to simplify this and not have to sit here and run multiple numbers over and over that may not be accurate anyway, is just, we know they all work. We know they all have benefits. We know they're all going to save you money. This is the way that I know to make it easy. Get them all priced, put them in a list, cheapest to most expensive, and just start working through the list. John, do you have any other thoughts on that?
I agree with that 100%. I can still give you a little bit of a prioritization if you don't mind. The fleet air filter, that again, that fits in with Kevin's philosophy there. So just do that first. Just get one of those and don't think about it, because no matter what the rest of the package is, that's going to help you. It's just a better filter. It's going to breathe better. It's just better. So yeah, so that's a no-brainer. The OPS, you know, your only return on investment of that is simply from not changing your oil. Kevin's a bigger fan of that than I. So even if you do every other oil change from what you would, that's going to pay for itself in, you know, 3 or 4 oil changes. So that's a good one too. You know, but to get your money back, you're definitely going to have to keep the oil in there longer. That's the only way that works. I do like what it does for your engine though. So you will have some added life to the engine. You see the return on that investment when the engine goes, you know, a full 1,000,000 miles rather than 700,000 or 800,000. So you could do the math on that. And that's when it pays for itself to me. That's the big deal there. Just getting the stuff out of your engine, keeping the bearings nice and clean. The VG Turbo, that's a tough one. As much as I love that, and it's kind of my brainchild, unless you've got the 264 gears and are able to run in direct and run the engine at a low speed and take advantage of the big fat torque curve we give you, you may not see big gains from that. Truck's going to be more fun to drive. It's going to pull like a C15 Caterpillar. that's you know, that's all great. And if you get personal satisfaction from that and just want a truck that runs that way, then go ahead and put it on. But money wise and fuel mileage wise, you know, unless you have the whole package and you learn to drive it and run a low RPM and so forth, you know, you're not going to see a whole lot. Our biggest success story with that's on Steve Krohn's contraption. And, you know, he was just knocking on the door for 11 and was looking for a few more tents, and we got him over the hump, you know, so that's that kind of thing.
Right.
That was like a cherry on top. You know, it's like, okay, we're close. Okay, let's do the turbo. And, you know, then we had hundreds of hours in tuning to get it exactly where it needed to be. So, but, that's how I look at that. I don't know about the rest of your package. What I would recommend right now, as soon as you get that thing done or after the rebuild's done, is get over here and let us put a tune on it. We'll help you out with that. We'll give it, you know, a nice 500 to the ground that's efficient and, you know, a little more powerful than stock. That's it, Ben. Ethan, is there any advantage to go DDEC 3 to DDEC 4?
No.
If he were DDEC 2, yeah. But if the 3 to 4 is such a – that's split in errors. There's no reason to make that change.
No, none whatsoever.
Hey, we're just about out of time. John, I agree with you on all those points. You said, you know, the VG Turbo makes it pull like a C15 cat, which is absolutely true. The tune would be amazing. I was just thinking, I wonder if there's going to come a time when you and I might make the comment, boy, if we do this, it'll pull like a Tesla.
No, we will never have that opportunity. would be leaving drive shafts and rear ends all over the ground to make it pull like that. There's no chance.
That's true. You make another good point there. You could put all kinds of horsepower and torque into an engine. You can't get it to the ground, though. Good point.
It's not making it to the ground. Nope.
Yeah. Good point. All right. That's going to do it for today. Lots of technology talk. I think I'm with John. We might have to split off and do a new show. Maybe we'll do it once a month called... Truck Tech. Maybe we'll call it something else. I like the idea, though, where we just do a show where we just talk about the new technology. Today was kind of that day. I've got to get out of here. We will see you next time. Thanks for joining me. Be safe, be profitable, be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we're going to start a second hour. We're going to get right to your calls and questions this time. Here we go.
Your money, your taxes, your truck, and your road to success in the trucking industry.
This is Trucking Business and Beyond, the show that puts the money where it belongs.
Back in your pocket.
Welcome to my world. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. The website is letstruck.com. The show is all about the business of trucking, and today is the Power Hour. I've got John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. We'll take your calls and answer your questions about everything maintenance, engines, performance, fuel mileage, upgrades, modifications, troubleshooting, emissions, new technology, you name it. We'll talk about it. All you have to do is pick up the phone and call. And I'll tell you what, today we've got lots of questions, so we're just going to jump right into them and get started. We're going to head off to Missouri. Tad, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yep,
hello?
It's your turn. Go ahead.
Hey, Tad.
Hey, just wanted to say, first of all, happy Thanksgiving to you and your families. Be safe out there.
Thank you.
All right, make two quick points, but then my main question. John, I'm now up to 27,000 miles. I've done 14 regens. I'm coming to see you. Hopefully we can get that problem fixed. It caused me to be late the other day, but that's okay. Other on that oil, I just checked it at 25,000. I just now added less than a half a gallon on that new oil that you put in my truck.
Terrific.
So I don't know if that's good or bad, or that's the first time I've added any oil to my truck in 4 years.
Well, that doesn't seem like much. Well, something's going on there, Tad. We need to get you in here sooner than later.
Yeah,
I know
well,
we got you on for, what, the third, fourth?
Maybe, yeah. Well, I'll come in there, but my main question is, okay, here's the thing. I wait until I get all the intel. I just wanted to, like, I just put brand new rubber and all that on, and I started getting a problem, and I've been listening to your callers the last couple weeks. Now, at nighttime when I drive, I use these little red lights on the trailer as a gauge, and I have a very slight vibration, okay? Now, and I've listened to what all you say, the recommendations to do. When I go from 10th, when I start doing a little incline or start pulling, when I go through 10th, getting ready to drop down to 9th, like it's ready to change, it'll vibrate I'll see the mirror vibrate. I'll hear it in my little cubbyhole covers. And then when I come off the gas and go in the 9th and stay in 9th, it won't do it anymore. And I know there's a vibration because if it's a nice day out and I put the window down, it's almost like a cover is vibrating on the right-hand side, and I can feel a tingle in my foot.
Hmm.
And
that's going to be a tough one to suss out.
I mean, is it, of course, we've never looked at the drive shaft or anything. Is it the motor mounts or whatever, or the drive shaft? I mean, is that something we got to check out when I get up there?
It might be time for drive. How many miles are on that truck, Dad?
We got 610.
610, okay. It might be time to get the drive shaft checked out. They recommend 500 to 600. Yeah, so if we get them, they tend to twist a little bit. You're making decent power, so there's a chance yours could be. So that's a possibility. Your regen issue, the reason it keeps regenning is because when it was here last time, it wouldn't complete it, and we could not figure out exactly why it wouldn't complete. So those are all partial regens. So what's happening is it's trying to regen and not getting it done for whatever reason.
Right.
So we'll get to the bottom of it. I was hoping it would get worse, but it'd have to get worse before it gets better, because we should hopefully be able to diagnose it now when we really couldn't before.
Well, like I said, I've got a log of all, I've got it for every regen that I've done. I've got it all neatly on paper for you, all the codes, how much fuel it burned, what the temperature were.
Right.
I did all that for you so you could get some kind of idea. And the good
how's
thing,
your
though,
fuel mileage right now?
It's gone down to the toilet. It's now 8.5.
Yeah, I think you might be running in some sort of D-rate. And you said you weren't getting anything out of the Dorothy anymore either, so to me it means that you might be in a D-rate that's got the EGR turned off.
I'm just concerned because everybody else is getting all, like, softball fillings of soot, and I pull mine off, and we got a couple crumbs, and it's, as always.
We don't get – I'll tell you what, the DD-15s, even though they've responded to it pretty well, they don't pick up as much stuff as the Cummins. The Cummins – last guy that called me that we put one on, he went about 25,000 miles and he took a coffee cup full out, which has been about the same for every Cummins, for every ISX we've done. So the Cummins is definitely catching.
Could it be just the Detroit? They built such a good motor. I mean, because I overlooked all my samples that I took, my 10 samples up to the Dorothy. Mm-hmm. And it's weird because I was at 0.2, 0.3 without the Dorothy. And now with the Dorothy, I looked at the other two, I'm up to 0.4, 0.5.
There, you've got something else going on. Because remember, when we first put it on, we were down at less than 1/10.
We were down, but like I said, do you want me to come in sooner?
Well, you're coming on the – I'm so busy, it won't matter. Yeah, you're going to come in on the 3rd and 4th, right?
Right, but I want to come in on the second and get on that 10% deal on the fleet air filter. But it's just frustrating, John, because I've never done so many regens in the first. I only did two or three in the first 4 years I had it, and now since I left the shop, we're looking at in less than 27,000 miles. I just did my 14th regen yesterday.
Yep. No, there's something going on. Yeah, there's definitely a problem.
Well, I'm dropping it off, and I'm dropping it off. I'm going to get married, and I ain't coming back until it's fixed.
Okay, good. Perfect.
But the reason I called, I'm starting to get that slight, and what concerned me is, now here, maybe this will help. Now, I got to put my foot, right? Now, if I let off and hit the gas hard, I want to say I feel a clunk under my foot, but I don't. It's like a noise. But that's only if I let off and hit the gas real quick. So I'm wondering, this could be mounts on the motor?
Or a U-joint.
Yeah, something's loose.
You got something going on. Yeah, U-joint, a
Scipio. Yeah, because like I said, it tickles my foot when I'm on it, but I just did something now I wanted to see. When I let off the gas and hit it real hard real quick, all I can tell you, I want to say it's making a noise, but you can feel something up front.
Okay. Yeah, there's something. Yeah, it could be a mount, too. But, yeah, you've got some driveline slop for some reason, so we'll look at that, too.
All right, let's head off to Alabama. Wallace, welcome to the program.
Yeah, guys, hey, Wallace down in Alabama. Hey, I got a 2007 ISX. I got 515,000 miles on it. Purchased this truck. I ain't got it on the road yet. I'm just doing a few things to it and kind of got what I thought was a deal on it. But anyhow, I got two problems. See if y'all might could help me with it. When I first crank it up and it's sitting there warming up, it gets to the point about to where that the EGR valve is to activate, you know, what does it do, close up or open at that point. Then I get over there at my actuator valve, I get a noise over there. It's like I'm trying to force air through a small hole. And it hadn't been doing this. It had been doing properly like it was supposed to. You know, when it got to the right temperature, the EGR valve would activate. Then you would hear, you know, you could hear it when it kicked in, the sizzling, you know, out the exhaust pipe. But now, it seems like right when it gets to about before that the EGR valve is supposed to activate, it seems like the noise is coming from the actuator valve is where the noise is at. And like I say, it sounds like you're trying to force air through a real small place, you know, with force to it. And I was wondering if y'all might could help me see what the problem might be.
One thing to check there is, again, do a boost test on it. We just had one come in the shop where the EGR piping was leaking. And that's what we found when we did a boost test. It was actually, you know, the pipe had developed a hole in it.
Uh-huh.
So that's a very good possibility, because when that EGR kicks on, the turbo changes position to force more air through the engine. And you could just be hearing the extra whistling of the air as it tries to compensate for the hole in the system.
Uh-huh. Yep. I do know I got two broke bolts there on the manifold at the front of the manifold. And I didn't know if that might be causing this, you know, in some way or another. There, where up, you know, at the front of the manifold, close to the EGR valve. I didn't know if I had a bad EGR valve. Now, you know, it's just started doing this, and I didn't know if I might have a bad EGR valve or if I had a bad actuator valve. You know, either one or the other there. And
It could be, but I always like to start with the cheapest method of just boost testing it there. Because it's the most probable problem, and that would mean it's the most likely, and it's also the cheapest one to check.
Excellent advice on how to troubleshoot right there. Wish more people did it that way. We've got to get to a break. We're going to come back and get to more of your calls and questions. Stick around. This is the Power Hour. I'm Kevin Rutherford. I've got John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're going to get right back to the phone calls. We're off to Arizona. Paul, welcome to the program. It's your turn.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I had two questions. One, on aerodynamics on my trailer, I've got a 53-foot van with the smart truck set up on it with the sled underneath, and I'm looking at getting belly boxes. And my question is, on the aerodynamics of the sled, I think putting a big belly box all the way across would kind of defeat the purpose of the sled. Am I mistaken on that?
John may have a better answer for you than I will. I don't know. The more I study aerodynamics, the more I realize that anything and everything changes that airflow, and I can't predict how. John, you may have some answers. We may even have to bring in Smart Truck to see what they think about.
Yeah, we ought to give Wolfie a call. I believe that it will. If it goes the whole way across, somewhere ahead of the sled, is that what they call it, a sled? I call it the, yeah. So what that's reliant on, the under tray, yeah. So what that's reliant on is speeding up the air that goes under. If you've tumbled the air before it gets it, I'm not sure that the under tray is going to catch it, to have it attached to it. So that air is what they call attached. It becomes attached to the under tray and it speeds up. And when it squeezes it between there and the ground, and it's attached in the shape of that under tray, kicks it back up to fill in the void behind your truck. So what that does is kind of creates a high pressure area behind the truck that makes like an invisible trailer tail, shall we say. So what the purpose of that thing is, got everything to do with what it does with the air behind the truck itself. So if you've disturbed that air to the degree with big square boxes in front of it, I can't imagine that it's going to be as effective as if they were not there. Now, if it's farther up on the truck toward the landing gear and they go down the sides and you've got an opening in the middle, it may be fine. I'd probably try to make it work with something. I'd try to fare in the back edge of the boxes somehow so that the air could reattach to that and direct over to the under tray. So, depending on the boxes themselves, I mean, pretty much any design I think is going to figure into that. It's definitely going to affect that in, one way or another.
Okay, yeah, because my what I was trying to figure out is the sled is about 52 inches wide, and mm-hmm. if I was, instead of putting a full length belly box on, if I put two, one on each side, that were only about 24 inches deep, it would leave about a 50-inch space between there for the air to flow down to the sled. And I'm just wondering if that, does that make sense? Would that still help the functionality of it, or does that even create more of an air disturbance issue?
I think it might help, actually. I think that if you channel that air down the middle, the boxes are going to act like side skirts to some degree. So that should help, and if they, if they're far enough ahead of the under tray, it may not have that ill of an effect.
Okay. All right, yeah, because I'm going to put them right up against the landing gear, as far as tied to the landing gear
right.
as I can, so that there's as much space between there and the sled. My other question was...
This is one of those cases where, have whatever you do make sense, look at it. There's a saying in race engineering that says, or engineering in general, I believe, that said if something doesn't look right, it isn't. So if you do it, make sure it looks right. Make sure it looks like air can make it there. And, I call it my wind tunnel vision. So I try to imagine what the air is doing and where it's going. And, I've actually got to spend time in wind tunnels and see what it does. So that helps. But it's interesting, what happens with it. But just think of water. It really does work in the same way as water. You move your hand through a bathtub, you're going to get a good example of what the air going around your hand looks like when you stick it out the window. So
right.
it's very similar. So keep that in mind as you do it and see what happens. I mean, just get some empirical data, put them on and
okay.
take it out and run it for a while and see what happens.
Okay.
And look at this stuff when it gets dirty. Get a look at, after you run in the rain for a while, climb under there and take a look at the under tray and see what the dirt marks look like, see what the streaks look like, see what it looks like. And then after you've, do it again after you've put your boxes on, take a look at it.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right, great. The other question I had, does a Fleet Air Filter have an air filter for the 2017 Freightliner, the DD-15?
I believe so. I'm pretty sure we've installed them. That's been the same one, I think, since 15, but we just had the guy on the last show who could answer that question for you immediately.
Yeah, I couldn't get in, though. All right. that's what I needed to know. I appreciate it, and we'll talk to you guys again.
All right. Thanks for the call. We're going to head off to Ohio. Joe, welcome to the program.
Hey.
What's on your mind
you hear
today?
Me?
Yep, go ahead.
What can we do for you?
Okay. All right. I have a little bit of a financial situation when it comes to deciding what I want to pick up. I got about $500 saved up because I bought a used truck at the beginning of the year, and 2 months in, the main bearing spun out in the engine. I had to get a new engine. And the last show, I was convinced that the Fleet air filter is definitely what I should get for the number one thing. Is there anything I can add on for about $200?
I don't know. I'd go with the Fleet air filter and save the $200 for your next purchase.
Okay. And then I had one other little tiny question. On the 387, that little visor up there, is that hurting my fuel economy by the way the air goes up underneath there? Or?
I think so. When you look at, you know, any of the super truck projects, when you look at any of the really aerodynamic trucks, that's anything external sticking out away, for the most part, unless it's been aerodynamically designed, is going to hurt airflow. And, you know, all the super trucks, no visors, very, very smooth transition right up there at the top, which is a critical point. So I do believe that any of the visors are going to negatively affect airflow. John, have you paid any attention to any that, you know, don't probably disturb airflow somewhat?
I have, and I'm not that well versed on which trucks they were. I believe it was the Kenworth T, which might be similar to this Peterbilt. There's one of them that actually looks like it probably helps. It's not, it's open. It probably channels air and helps to speed up some air up over the top of the roof of the truck. But it was one of the ones. I think it's a T. Is it a T680 or T700? The one that's got the full roof that goes over everything.
Oh yeah, because mine.
Yeah.
So, mine sticks out, and then it has an open gap underneath there, and then it has a flat spot behind it. So it's basically like a windsock that you sew the end up shut, is what it looks like if you look at it.
Yeah, that's the one I think that might actually help. The rest of them I think are terrible. I think they're just a big pack, a bunch of air up. But that there's a one on the one Packard product that looks like it probably helps. You know, again, that would be something that I'd take off and do a couple of trips with it and put it back on. Try both ways. But there is one that looks like it probably helps the air to attach to go over the top, which would just would speed some air up and add some air to that air that's attached to the top of the cab and over the roof of the bunk, and probably help seal up on the way over to the roof of the trailer. So that's the effects of that probably help the whole way at the trailer. So if it works.
Okay.
If it doesn't, air is just gonna pack up in front of it, and it's gonna be drag. So.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for the call. Hey, John, we're coming up on a break. I just happened to be while you were answering that question, I just happened to be scrolling through Facebook. You and I have now been blamed on wasting the entire power hour talking about.
That's okay. I apologize to whoever it is that we upset with that. We did kind of get rolling there. I do apologize. If you're waiting for a call, hopefully you're around this hour.
But, you know, in a good way, really. This is really important information for the trucking industry. I mean, you may not want to hear it, and clearly, that's why there's lots of channels on the radio and other things you could go do. And I do like the idea of you and I taking, you know, a show once a month and doing all new technology. And, you know, we'll separate that out. But I'm certainly not going to stop talking about this. I'm not going to stop posting about this. I've been saying this for a year now, we are in the middle of probably one of the biggest disruptions we'll ever see in this industry. And to not talk about this, I think would almost be criminal.
Oh, I agree. Sticking your head in the sand is no way to deal with it. It's technology is going to happen. You can't stop it. If there's something in the world you cannot stop, you know, it's right up there with a meteor heading toward Earth. I mean, technology, yeah. You are not going to stop. You're not. You just can't. People are going to learn. Schools are going to teach. Learn. You know, it's nonstop. You know, so the willful ignorance some people have just drives me insane. You know, so you cannot stop technology, and it's a wonderful thing. Enjoy it. You know, it's obviously I'm pretty passionate about it, and I care, and yeah, I thoroughly enjoy it.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, and I guess I should be, you know, somewhat appreciative of the fact that even though we're on the air 13 hours, people still want more. And if I had more time, I would do more time. But I will think about pulling the technology, the electric vehicles, the autonomous vehicles off, and we'll do a show. We'll be right back. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. The website is letstruck.com. I've got John and Ethan with me from Pittsburgh Power. John, I just want to make another comment. You know, clearly I understand why drivers are very upset about autonomous technology. I get that. I'm upset. It eliminates my entire business and my audience. So I'm not really excited about that change, but I realize what you just said is absolutely ironclad true. We're not going to even slow down technology. It's not going to happen. We are moving forward on that front, and the best we can do is watch for it, look for the opportunities. But I certainly wouldn't confuse this, you know, new excitement about electric vehicles with autonomous vehicles. Two totally different things. And I think somehow they're getting mixed up, partly because we're talking about Tesla, and Tesla is also kind of a leader in the autonomous technology. But honestly, in the near term, and when I say near term, I'm talking the next decade, the next 10 years, I am really excited about what's going on in trucking. Honestly, I'll say this again, if I still had my fleet at FedEx, I'd be ordering one of those Tesla trucks. I would be very excited to be an owner operator thinking about going down the road in an electric truck that has some pretty advanced autopilot features that may allow me to do some other work while I'm driving. You know, if the vehicle can kind of take over when we're on the highway and it's safe to do so, and I could be booking my next load or calling customers or, you know, getting some work done or who knows, whatever it might be. I think the next decade in trucking is extremely exciting. I don't see autonomous technology putting a lot of drivers out of work in the next 10 years. Beyond 10 years, I wouldn't even venture to guess. There's too much changing right now. You know, I find it interesting when I see these predictions very long term. Like I saw something that said, you know, gave some percentage of how many trucks will be electric by the year 2050. Well, who's stupid enough to try to predict what's going to happen in 2050? I'm not sure what's going to happen by 2020. And that's only a couple years away.
I agree. Yeah. And with all these technologies, there's other opportunity. I mean, there are going to be blue collar jobs to go with it. There are going to be, you know, the phases of autonomy are going to be, you know, probably just some lanes here and there, but there will have to be staffed, you know, places where these things stop, and you know there's going to be a relay station of some sort. There's just so much that's going to go on between now and, you know, 50 years from now, that there's opportunity in. And even the electric end, I mean, that rare earth stuff that's in the motors, that you know, there're going to be mines to find that neodymium. What's that stuff called?
Neodymium.
That's
and
it.
And then
yeah.
The strontium too.
So there's a lot of, you know, you look at, you know, I made the analogy in the last show about the, you know, steel jobs, you know, we'll have more jobs in the autonomous world, but all this stuff that goes in that, all the cottage industry around it, there's opportunity in all of it. You just need to keep your eyes open, which is, you know, why I don't mind talking about it. And it's a hobby of mine. I love it. You know, I love technology. I love to see what's new. I love to, you know, see really cool things like that. You know, it's just, it keeps me occupied. It's what I read at night.
Yeah, well, me too. And like I say, I think the next decade in trucking is really exciting. I don't see this as a negative right now. Long term, maybe if I were, you know, 25 years old in this industry, I'd be thinking what my long term options might be. But, you know, a decade is a long time. And I think we have a decade of just huge opportunity. And I think this technology is exciting. What was that word you guys were just saying? What was that?
Neodymium.
Neodymium. That's the stuff in the magnets inside the motors. Yeah, that's an actual permanent magnet motor that uses a rare earth magnet rather than coils. That's why they're so efficient now. So the batteries, you know, you talk about energy and battery, but the engines or the motors have become so much more efficient since they don't have to have a charged coil wound around the armature. Around the stator, whatever you want to call it. The stator is on the outside, right? So my electric motor, I'm not that versed in electric motor, but regardless, they don't need an electromagnet on the outside of it. It's a permanent magnet now, which is, that's the technology that's happened in the past few years that really is helping this to explode. It's on both ends. It's the motors and the batteries, but the storage has gone up and the motors have become way more efficient because they use this stuff. Well, that stuff's got to come from somewhere, you know. Someone's got to dig it up, you know. It has to, you know. So that's the deal.
Well, that was a great lesson. I just wanted to learn how to pronounce the word because, you know, it kind of reminded me of.
Well, I'd have to defer. I have to defer to Ethan on it. I get it wrong every time.
But kind of reminded me of molybdenum. I can never get that one right. The moly that's in oil. I still can't pronounce that one. I'll just call
molybdenum.
It moly.
Yeah, that's molybdenum.
Yeah. That one always gets me all twisted up. All right, let's get back to some phone calls. Let's go to Texas. Mark, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen. At the risk of hurting the feelings of all the Facebook trolls out there and talking about autonomous technology, this is the first time I've heard Kevin today say anything as far as my thought process on autonomous vehicles, and everybody talking about it and worrying about it and thinking they're going to be out of a job and so on and so forth. Just think of it this way. We've had the technology for completely autonomous trains for a long time, yet we still have engineers. Okay. Same thing applies to aircraft. Okay, we have the technology to fly an aircraft from start to finish, land it, take off, land it, the whole ball of wax. Yet we still have pilots, okay? It'll be a long time. It's not going to be in my lifetime for sure, and probably not anybody that's 25 years old lifetime, that there's going to be trucks rolling down the road with no people in them. I don't see that happening. If they're not doing it with trains or planes, what makes you think they're going to do it with semis? Today was the first time I've ever heard Kevin make a little bit of a reference to that. I'm glad he did finally, and I hope it puts some people's mind at ease. But bottom line, it's not going to happen anytime soon. It's 25 plus years away from even happening. Trains will happen first, and then planes maybe. But trucks, I just don't see it happening. I can see full autonomous, but there's going to be somebody behind that wheel.
I'll disagree with you on the order, and here's why. I do think I haven't really studied the train thing, but I can tell you
from a track. I mean, how much more safe could you be?
I understand, but so it, like I said, I haven't really thought much about why it hasn't happened in trains yet, but I'll talk about why it hasn't happened in planes. And it's not going to happen in planes anytime soon. Because here's the thing. If we take a truck and we make it fully autonomous, there's no driver in it whatsoever, and it crashes. Well, it's possible it's going to crash on its own and nobody gets hurt. It's possible it runs into another vehicle and it kills somebody. It could happen. It could kill three or four people. It could run into a bus and maybe it kills 10. And I'm not downplaying that, but there's two huge reasons you're not going to see this in a commercial airplane. One, passengers aren't going to get on a plane without a pilot. They're just not going to do it. That's perception. It's not going to happen. And two, if the technology goes wrong, you're going to kill 300 people on the plane and maybe 300 more on the ground somewhere. The catastrophe would be huge when it happens. So I don't see it happening in planes, period, for those two reasons. But when you look at the vehicle technology on the road and you see a company like Uber just ordered 24,000 cars with their plan to be fully autonomous, I don't think I would bet on it taking 25 years.
I'll go with that. We can agree to disagree there. Well, the different reason, as I mentioned in the last show about the, calling Tesla a technology company more than an automotive company. Though the companies that developed the autonomy for the trains, that was just to give the guys a break who were there. And one man in a train, or one or two or three, whatever it takes, is hauling, 100 trucks worth of stuff or more? Like how much, with the intermodal stuff, how many trailers stacked on top of each other times how many cars? So how many drivers does that one driver of the train represent? So it's not a... In the train, that the engineer is not the financial factor that it is in a truck. Okay, good. So the numbers are really skewed there. So there's really not much advantage to having the train be fully automated. Like it's not saving anybody any money, very little. I mean, compared to per ton of freight that it's hauling, it's nothing. So in a truck, it's a whole other story. Or trucks, it's a whole other story. So that'll drive it.
Yep. Hate to cut you off. We're going to come right back. But that's a very good point on the train side. You're right. There's just not a big economic incentive there. We start talking about vehicles on the road, whether it's cars or trucks, it's a whole different game. We'll be right back. Stick around. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right, we are heading into the final segment. We might be able to squeeze in one more call or so. So if you've got a question or comment, you press 1 on your phone right now, we might be able to squeeze you in. Here we go. Welcome back. I'm Kevin Rutherford. This is the Power Hour. We're down to the final segment. We're going to get right to the phone calls. We are off to North Dakota this time. John, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, John. Hi. I was listening to Pittsburgh Power on the app here this last Sunday, and then next thing you know, Kevin Beckett's came across. I heard you guys talking about your fuel being off balance in the tanks. And then Beckett was saying how he steered the axles because of the crown of the road. And then something clicked in my mind. I'm just wondering on the physics on it. Could that be the crown of the road be the reason why you're 10, 20 gallons off between tanks?
That was my first thought, John.
I don't know. It could be. How much angle? You'd have to do the math on that. It's going to balance out, you know, because it's going to siphon back and forth. Regardless of what the delivery is, it's still going to should even up. So if there's enough of a crown on the road, I could see that creating an imbalance. A good call. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, whatever side the splitter valve would be up would
have
more restriction.
Yeah. Yep.
Right.
I like that philosophy. Miles, good work. Yeah.
Over 1,200 miles, you're going to end up with 20 or 30 gallons in the passenger side tank over the driver's side tank. So I don't know. That's kind of the thought that was running through my head, and I was thinking of taking it back to the physics and the basics.
Yep.
That's an interesting thought. John, I have an assignment for you then.
Okay, I'm going to have to do the math on that, huh?
Well, no, you need to jump on a plane and fly someplace where they drive on the left side of the road, and let's see if the left side tank holds more fuel than the right side.
Great, great excuse for me to go to New Zealand. I got it. Yeah, I'm there. But the earth, but with the everything spins the other direction down there too. I don't know how that would help, that would work. So maybe I have to go to England and do research instead.
You know. It's true that where they drive on the left side of the road, vehicles all have a tendency to pull to the left, whereas here we always pull to the right, and it's a crown of the road thing. And you can't overcome that with alignment. In fact, it's almost the opposite. Sometimes it's almost impossible to make a truck pull to the left. If you start to overcompensate that way, it still goes back and keeps pulling to the right.
Well, you're going to tear tires off of it, and you're going to be really, really, really inefficient if you were to do that. So, yeah, you just got to deal with it, fall on the crown a little bit.
Interesting thought. Yeah. Well, I like people that think that way, though.
That's awesome. Yep.
Yeah, let's go to California. Dave, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin. I'm about to buy a new truck, and he's selling me his T13 2008 Peterbilt, and he only wants $5,000 for it, and he's got a rebuilt engine about 65,000 miles ago.
Well,
so I want to know, is that a good deal?
Hold on. You said a 2008. I thought I heard T13. What's that?
Yes.
What
T13 Peterbilt.
Peterbilt. I don't know what that truck is.
I don't either.
Oh.
I've never.
Well, it says 460. That's the size, T13. I thought that was the size of the truck.
Maybe it's got a C13 engine in it, 2008.
Yeah, that's what I meant. C13. I'm sorry, Cat 13. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Got it. Yeah. All right. So what you said, it's a Peterbilt. Do we know which model?
Oh, I just know he said C13 Peterbilt 2008. I'm not sure, what model it is, but I've seen the truck. It's slightly smaller than the trucks that I've been driving.
Before we get down to any details, first off, I own one of those engines. I own an 07 C13, very, very similar. The 08 is actually going to be worse, because it's going to have a DPF. I'm not happy with my C13, period. I'm not sure that there's much we could do to it that would make me happy. I think 08s are the trucks I would stay away from in general. $6,000 might convince me to buy something, because there's not that much you could lose. But I think there's a bigger issue here. Sound like you're pretty new to trucking. How long have you been doing this?
Actually, I've been doing it for a long time, but never got a really good job at a good company.
You've never been an owner operator then? Would this be your first truck?
Yes, and he wants $5,000 for it.
Oh, 5,000. Well, that's even a little more enticing. But again, I think there's a bigger picture here. This almost sounds like to me like it's what I call a purchase because of opportunity, rather than a purchase because Yeah, rather than a purchase because we had a real business plan in place and we're following the plan. I've watched people do this my whole life. They're driving down the road and they see a storefront that's for rent. Oh, look, that would be a great place to have a store. Well, if you were really looking for a great place to have a store and you actually had a plan, you would find dozens of places. There are thousands and thousands of trucks for sale. But this sounds to me like you weren't really in the market to get a truck and become an owner-operator, but your friend has this truck, so maybe I'll think about it. I think that's a horrible reason to buy a truck. So this wouldn't be my first choice of truck, an 08 C13 I can't get really excited about. But I really think the bigger issue here is if you were to sit down and you truly wanted to become an owner-operator and you had a plan and you were working through the plan, the truck itself, they're everywhere. This may or may not be a great deal. I don't know. $5,000, kind of hard to go wrong. But I honestly don't think you're really in a position to buy this truck and become an owner-operator. I just think you should put more work into the plan rather than just saying, oh, look, here's this opportunity, and I don't know if it's a great opportunity or not, but a lot could go wrong. So I think you should take a step back and decide whether you truly want to be in business and own a truck, because that's a big step. And if you work through that and this truck's still around and still available, maybe this is the one to buy. But I wouldn't buy it just because it's there and it's cheap. Let's get to another call. Let's go to Oklahoma. Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. Good. What's on your mind?
Good. I got a 2013 Cascadia DD13 auto shift, but 264 rear, super wide, singles. And I was wanting to get the ECM reprogrammed where I can get, you know, because it's a Maverick truck. It was a Maverick truck, so I don't have a lot of horsepower.
What year is it? The 13?
Yeah, 2013.
We're not quite there yet with that one. We're going to work on, well, it's a DD15, but the 13 should be the same.
Yeah, very close. That's actually, I'm working on that as we speak.
Yeah, we're working on it right now. We've got a truck coming over the holiday break between Christmas and New Year that one of the radio show listeners has been kind enough to give us as a test mule. So we're going to be developing tunes for that. Hopefully we'll have something for you after the first of the year. But I'd highly recommend it. Yeah, we could do it'd definitely give you a little bit more horsepower. Get in there and flash that, and we could do some more for you on it. So we've had pretty good success with the tune on the pre-DEF DD13s and 15s. And so we've got some really, really nice running trucks there. But we've not got all the code we need to do the newer ones yet.
Okay.
But I'd highly recommend it, especially if it was a company truck. I mean, we could even just give you a little bit more and make it better.
Okay.
Could he go to a dealership and get a flash to the highest factory?
He could.
If you've got a friendly Detroit dealer, you might be able to pop in there and just have it turned up to the highest factory rating for that engine, if it's the correct parts list.
The dealer told me that where it said it was all they could do with it, so I don't know.
Okay, well, it might already be there then. It may already be there. So, yeah.
Okay.
But that's a great little engine. Yeah, you should enjoy that.
Yeah, the only thing is I got to run, 58 or 60. Sometimes I need to step it on up to get, but my fuel mileage is good when I stay around 60 or below. Keep your RPMs about 13.5 to 1400. I do good. But once I get over that, it starts falling back. It's still doing good.
All right. Got to cut it off right there. We are all out of time. Thanks to John and Ethan from Pittsburgh Power for doing all the heavy lifting around here. Thanks for all the callers. Great stuff. We'll see you next time. Be safe. Be profitable. Be fit and healthy. Always do the hard work and master the journey. I'm Kevin Rutherford. All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you back here tomorrow for Destination Health.